Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Robert Coulson, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Welcome, Rob. Thanks for joining me by phone today.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
All right. Well, this time it really is beyond Moscow. At least one of the both of the topics we'll be talking about, the protests in and around Khabarovsk in the Far East and the trial and verdict for Yuri Dmitriev, Gulag historian who's on trial in Karelia. Well, it looks like let's talk about Khabarovsk first. Looks like the protests there are going to continue to make waves, whether or not they continue. Just a reminder, for more than a week now, there have been rallies every day to protest the arrest of Khabarovsk region Governor Sergei Furgal, who's accused of organizing, I think it's two killings and one attempted killing in 2004-2005. Now, demonstrators are opposing his arrest. He was elected in 2018. And he's from the LDPR. And they're also airing grievances with Moscow and in some cases chanting slogans against President Vladimir Putin. Now, both this past Saturday and the previous Saturday, the protests were very large, really for any city outside Moscow, with tens of thousands of people. And the population there is about 600,000 something. So the estimated crowd of up to 50,000, I believe, this past Saturday, you know, is quite large. There have also been protests in other cities in the Khabarovsk region and other regions in the Far East, including in Vladivostok and in Birobidzhan. Now, part of the context of these rallies is the fact that earlier this month, Putin secured the option of seeking two more six-year terms as president after 2024 by pushing through a package of amendments to the Constitution. Rob, how big a factor do you think that has been in what's happening in Khabarovsk? What can you say about, I guess, what's driving the protests there and how things may unfold?
I think that was a big factor. The Khabarovsk region has a reputation for being one of the so-called protest regions in Russia, and a well-earned reputation that way. The election of Furgal in 2018 was just a huge slap in the face to United Russia. He got 70% of the vote against the United Russia incumbent in that runoff election. Mm-hmm. And that was on the strength, you'll remember, of the pension reform, the very controversial pension reform. So in a sense, what we're seeing now is a rehashing of the pension reform protests, I think, mm-hmm. to a large extent. Another thing that I think is really interesting is that how the Kremlin is handling this whole situation. If they, first of all, when they wanted to, when the 2018 election came up, the Kremlin worked really hard to get Furgal not to run at all, and they offered a bunch of carrots and sticks to the LDPR, and they didn't work, mm-hmm. which is strange because in a lot of the other regions in Russia, strong communist candidates, strong A Just Russia candidates were prevented from even running against the United Russia candidate. But in this case, they didn't, and he humiliated the United Russia candidate. It feels as if the system that's worked so well under Putin of this systemic opposition, it was a failure of that system. Now they wanted to remove Furgal, apparently. And you would think that under the old system, they would have just gone to Zhirinovsky, they would have struck a deal with him, Furgal would have moved to the Federation Council or something like that, and they would have struck a deal. But it didn't happen that way, and now they have this very murky arrest on charges that are more than a decade old. And it sort of feels as if maybe now that the constitutional amendments have gone in and Putin is more or less secured all the way to 2036, maybe they're thinking they don't need this systemic opposition anymore, this facade of democracy. And we might be seeing in the late stage of Putinism a switch to something closer to the Soviet one-party state.
Right. And I think Putin has given sort of hints or said things that might suggest that as well. And but, you know, the question, I guess, in that case, you know, if they do feel that way is whether that can work, I guess, you know, and you see, you know, you mentioned this is kind of a rehash, you know, going back to the pension reform protest when the retirement age was raised by 5 years, I think, for both men and women, that created both protests and genuine anger. And I think to some degree, I mean, I guess, you know, Putin's potential extension of his time in office, I mean, it's obviously not kind of directly, you know, a cause of these protests, but it does feel like, you know, this guy was elected, you know, in part because of the opposition to the pension reform or the retirement age increase. And now, you know, I think people there to some degree are thinking, well, you know, the Kremlin's trying to kind of relitigate or, you know, annul the 2 years later, annul the results of that election. And it does say something about, you know, what the feelings are about, you know, where democracy is going in Russia, I think, with the new amended constitution. So I guess there is a question of whether, you know, if Putin doesn't feel that he needs the systemic opposition, you know, is that something that is wise or can it work if the Kremlin wants to pretty much create something closer to a single party state?
Yeah, it might not be so much that Putin himself has made this sort of decision, but that the people around Putin feel emboldened to try to push the systemic opposition out. I mean, it's not only a matter of, to some extent, sharing political power, minimally, but economic power as well. Mm-hmm. Furugal has a stake in a steel factory down in Komsomolsk, or in Khabarovsk, excuse me. Mm-hmm. That is three quarters owned by the Rotenberg family, and you can see the economic factors going into it as well. The communists and the LDPR and even the Just Russia people have economic interest that the Putinists would like to have as well. So pushing them out doesn't just mean getting them out of the Duma, but getting them out of the economy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's quite interesting, and I mean, it sort of brings to mind, I mean, not the idea that I won't really say the Siloviki, but people around Putin, you know, that section of the elite are feeling emboldened to try to, you know, remove, you know, the non-systemic opposition, and now we're talking about this the systemic opposition. So, kind of clear the path after this these constitutional amendments for yet another tightening of power, and we'll see how that plays out, I guess, in Khabarovsk.
Yeah, I think that they are feeling that there is going to be a stability of Putinism for, you know, a decade or more, and they're just sort of trying to position themselves to take advantage of that.
Right. Yeah, it's a very good observation. All right. Well, thanks, Rob. Let's move on to the other topic. This is much shifting much further west to Karelia. Yuri Dmitriev, historian of the Gulag, faces a verdict expected Wednesday this week in his trial in Karelia's capital, Petrozavodsk, on a charge of sexually assaulting his adopted daughter. Dmitriev denies the charge. He's always denied any wrongdoing in a series of cases against him. And he and supporters say the prosecution is an attempt to thwart his research into extrajudicial executions in Karelia under Stalin, in the Soviet era, obviously. Now, Dmitriev was first arrested in 2016, and he was already acquitted once on a less severe charge. Now prosecutors are seeking a 15-year prison sentence if he is convicted. Rob, this seems like an important case that's coming at a crucial time when we've seen, as we were just discussing, the authorities kind of clamping down further on dissent after the constitutional changes, and also clamping down or in the past, you know, few years, sort of taking greater efforts to you know, combat attempts to expose and address Soviet-era crimes of the state. You know, we saw this in the run up to the 75th anniversary celebrations of the end of World War II in Europe. Do you think the verdict and sentence in Dmitriev's trial will be kind of a signal about where things may be headed in Russia, or is it more of an isolated case that won't really contain broader clues?
Oh, it's absolutely not an isolated case. I think it's really significant that they're treating a historian basically like a political opposition figure. You could almost compare Dmitriev to Navalny in a sense. This is a serious case that's been going on for almost four years now. His personal reputation has been trashed in a sense. It shows that the rewriting or the reframing of Soviet history is a key element of the Russian government's sort of proto-ideology, almost might call it. And I think it's one of the things that has not been appreciated enough about Putinism is, in general, over the last two decades, is the damage that it's done to academics, particularly history, but across the field, you hear these horrific reports about from Dissernet about these people just faking their university degrees and the universities that allow them to do that. The whole academic system has just been completely trashed. Another thing that I think is important in this context is that Putin has promised to build this new World War II archive center in St. Petersburg that basically, I assume, is going to be about creating and promoting and enforcing an orthodox view of this Soviet role in World War II that is... it's chilling, I think, in a very real sense. Another thing I would mention about the Dmitriev case, I touched on a little bit, is how long it's dragged out. I mean, he was arrested in 2016, acquitted already, and he's on another trial, even more severe charges. It reminded me when the journalist, when the military journalist Ivan Safronov was arrested on treason charges about a week ago, I guess. Yeah. I was writing about that, and I was looking back at some of these cases, and you'll remember Alexander Nikitin, he was arrested in 1996 and acquitted in 2000. Grigory Pasko was arrested in 1997, and he was convicted in 2001. Mm-hmm. It just, no matter how it turns out, whether he's acquitted, whether he's fined, whether he's sentenced to prison, I mean, it's already been a four-year sentence that these guys are facing, and so it makes me extremely concerned about the Safronov case.
Right, and you also have this phenomenon, you know, as you mentioned, he was acquitted, Dmitriev acquitted in 2018 on a lesser charge, and you have this phenomenon, you know, most of the, I remember writing about one man in Russia a long time ago who, you know, had been tried several times, essentially for the same crime, and you have, or the same alleged crime, and you have, you know, people like Khodorkovsky and Navalny who have both, you know, been convicted twice after lengthy trials. You know, in Khodorkovsky's case, I believe the accusations were essentially, you know, were sort of, was a similar case, similar, you know, the same type of information that they were using to try him a second time. So, you know, it's kind of a sign that, well, you know, we got him once or we didn't get him the first time. And let's try again. And that, seems to be what's been happening with Dmitriev. One could guess. And then I believe there was a situation where he, was, you know, this second case against him has had several twists and turns. So, you know, as you mentioned, kind of 4 years of this, and now he faces a possible 15 year prison sentence if he's convicted.
Yeah, and then the first case, he was actually, I believe, he was in custody most of the time during the trial and the pretrial period. So he's been under house arrest for a second trial, but I mean, it's almost a custodial sentence that he's already served for this crime. And another thing about you mentioned the second trial and the new charges, as far as I understand, there hasn't really been any new evidence presented. It's just rehashing the old evidence that was already rejected in the first case.
Right. And well, I mean, one other thing to watch, obviously, it's kind of, I mean, for him, it's, you know, a kind of a life and death type situation. But we've also seen, you know, in some cases, people being convicted, acquittal rates extremely low in Russia, convicted, and then the question being, you know, will they be, there's always a bigger question of will they be sentenced to actual, you know, prison time or given suspended sentences, you know, and how much prison time. So that'll be something, you know, for outsiders, you know, for us to watch, and for Dmitriev to find out about, you know, presumably on Wednesday.
Yeah, he is in his 60s, and if he's convicted, it is basically a life sentence. There'll be a lot of pressure on him to ask for a pardon or some sort of amnesty, in which case he would almost certainly have to admit his guilt, which would be just an even greater travesty of justice.
Right. All right. Well, we're running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up with that for today. Rob, thanks very much for joining me.
All right. Thanks for having me. It's good to talk to you again.
All right. Good to talk to you. I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.